Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Labor rights, civil rights. It's Martin Luther King Day 2022. And today on the show, Jeff Bryant of the Independent Media Institute and the United Association out of Austin, Texas. Welcome to the Monday, January 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Jeff Bryant. Jeff is with the Independent Media Institute, and for a long time now, he's been covering schools. Our Schools is the name of his post. And today we're going to take a look at what happened in the state of Ohio some weeks back when 100 of Ohio's school districts sued the state over its Ed Choice voucher program, claiming the program is a violation of the constitutional requirement to uphold a system of common schools. Now, here's the deal. The voucher funding often functions like a coupon program for white families who are already enrolled in private schools or have the wherewithal to pay for private schools. While 50% of the voucher recipients are not white, the communities from which the students come are almost 70% non-white, meaning that vouchers are disproportionately going to white families. And if you go back 10 years, $2 billion of tax money has gone to private institutions. And you know what's happening. It's draining the public system. That's why they have to go to the well or go to various property owners and say, hey, we got to raise a levy because we don't have enough money. That's the first part. The second part deals with Erie, Pennsylvania. And the story is about GE Transportation. At one time, they had 20,000 workers. Well, just like so many manufacturing companies, they are a mere shell of themselves. They're down to, I believe, around 2,000. And that has just drained the community, drained them big time. Other companies have followed suit. Hammermill, Paper Company, Lord Corporation. They all moved out of the area pretty much, and the schools were devastated. But this has a happy ending because when the system, again, this is Erie, Pennsylvania, when they were drained by so much money, the community got together. In fact, you got to salute United Way, and they said, we have to collectively do something about this, and they linked up and they turned it around. It's not 100%. Don't get me wrong here. But what we're talking about is community schools. And if you go to the website, independentmediainstitute.org, you can read how community schools are helping a hard-hit city like Erie, PA, dig out of tough times. And you know there's many, many, many Erie, Pennsylvanias out there. It's the hollowing out of the middle class. That's what's happened in America over the past 40 years. And schools are the first ones to be hit because of property tax values. They're linked to that. They don't have property tax values when companies move out. What are you going to do? That's where the community schools come in. So Jeff's going to be our first guest. Second guest of the show is going to be Robert Chapp Thornton, and he comes to us from Local 286 of the United Association Plumbers and Pipefitters. Website is local286.org, and I love what he posted on the website. He says that the person who works with his hands is a laborer, the person who works with his hands and his head is an artisan, the person who works with his hands, his head, and his heart, well, that's a member of the United Association. God love him for that. Plumbers and Pipefitters Local 286 was chartered back in 1923, and their jurisdiction covers much of the central Texas area, about 8 or 9 counties there. And last report, they had about 1,300 union-trained plumbers and pipefitters. It's my understanding that number has jumped up. We'll get an update from Bob when we link up with him. And also, if you go to the website, you will find out that the United Association provides an ample supply of highly trained labor, matching any size project, need, or skill requirement. And that includes, let me run down the list here briefly, process piping, steam, hot water, refrigeration, air conditioning, medical gas, boilers, pipe fabrication, hydraulics, controls, all welding processes, HVAC service, energy management, rigging, drafting, and industrial instrumentation. I mean, they do it all at the United Association, and they do it well. Altogether, the UA, over 300,000 members strong and growing, and growing. Again, the website is local286.org. Well, as you know, today is Martin Luther King Day, and it's only appropriate that we play this clip from MLK, and this was the day before he was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. He was standing up for striking sanitation workers, and he was making the connection between labor rights and civil rights. Let's listen to Martin Luther King.
You are demanding that this city will respect the dignity of labor. So often we overlook the worth and the significance of those who are not in professional jobs, of those who are not in the so-called big jobs. But let me say to you tonight that whenever you are engaged in work that serves humanity and is for the building of humanity, it has dignity and it has worth. All labor has dignity. But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. You are demonstrating that we are all tied in a single garment of destiny, and that if one black person suffers, if one black person is down, we are all down.
Martin Luther King, April 3rd, 1968, the day before he was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, Jeff Bryant on behalf of the Independent Media Institute right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. And you could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one and welcome back to the show. Haven't had him on for a while. Jeff Bryant is his name. And he comes to us from the Independent Media Institute. He's been following schools all around the country. And today, at least in the first segment, we're going to talk about what's happening in the state of Ohio. And we have seen a lot of public money going to charter schools. We talk about it so many times with Melissa Cropper, who is going to be joining us tomorrow on the show on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. But now we have a lawsuit that is attempting to change all that. Hey, Jeff, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks, Ed, for having me on the show again. Always a pleasure.
You know, why don't you refresh our listeners about the Independent Media Institute and what you actually do? And I know you've been doing this for quite some time. So can you give us some details on that?
Yes, I serve as the chief correspondent for the Independent Media Institute's Our Schools Project. Essentially, I report about education policy and politics on a national level. I've reported about schools in Ohio for sure, but in many other states too. My website is called edpolitics.org. And I've closely followed stories in particular about the privatization movement, how charter schools and vouchers are chipping away at our schools. And I also report about what schools are doing to improve and get better. Public schools, there's a lot of good news that's coming out of public schools, and you don't hear that in the media very often. It's always the bad news. But in particular, I've reported extensively about a school improvement model called community schools, which are making huge progress across the nation.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in the next segment. And there's a really good story of what happened in Erie, Pennsylvania. We'll do that a little bit later. But let's talk about this Ed Choice voucher program. And apparently, a number of groups have come together and saying, you know what, we got to go to court on this. So there's a huge lawsuit that's been filed. Why don't you explain what's going on here?
Well, the state of Ohio has created a voucher program that allows parents. Initially, it allowed parents who were low income or whose children attended a struggling school to apply for a voucher and pull their child out of the public school system and send them to a private school. But recently, the state expanded the program to where it covers almost every family in the state. And the problem with the voucher program is that, first of all, the money goes to school that is unaccountable to the public. If it goes to a private school, the school can teach its own curriculum. It can it can pick and choose which kind of students they want to educate, and the school doesn't have to enforce the kind of testing that public schools have to enforce. So the money essentially disappears from the system without any kind of accountability. And also, when the students leave the public schools, it leaves the public schools without that money that they need. And essentially, the public school, if it loses 10% of its students, it can't cut back its costs by 10%. It has to still run the buses. It still has to heat the school. It still has to pay for the faculty and the janitor and the administration, what have you. You even have a situation like in the Groveport, Madison district, which is near Columbus, where one requirement in the voucher system is that even when the students leave the school district and go to a private school or they attend a voucher a charter school, the school district still has to pay for the bus transportation for those children. And you have a situation like Groveport Madison Schools, which is a district near the Columbus area, that has been fined almost $700,000 for failing to provide the bus transportation for the private and charter school children. In the meantime, Groveport Madison Schools, as you know, is in the news right now, is having a hard time finding bus drivers for their own children.
So the
choice system that has been set up in Ohio is stretching schools to the breaking point where they can't even provide the basics because their money's being taken away and is ending up in private and charter schools.
You know, the part I don't get, Jeff, is the lack of accountability. And is there any accountability for charters at all, at least in the state of Ohio? Because there is accountability with public schools. And you hear lawmakers coming down on public education all the time and say, we got to go. You know, public education isn't working. We got to go a different way. And that's usually when they bring up either private education or charter schools. But what about the accountability part?
With charter schools, charters are exempt from 150 regulations that the state of Ohio enforces in the public school system. The talking point that for countering that is to say, well, the charters are still accountable to the parents. The parents can, quote unquote, vote with their feet. And if they don't like something about the school, they can leave. But that's not really how it works. A parent that decides to pull a child out of the public school system and go to a charter has made a big commitment. And if halfway into the school system they find the school is not working out for them, it's not easy to just leave the school. And sometimes also the schools that are available around that parent's household, if they are also low accountability, poorly performing charters, that's not much of a choice. So the idea that parents can just pull their kids in and out of a school and send them to wherever they want is not really a viable idea.
Now, Jeff, what about this lawsuit? It's my understanding that a number of school districts have gotten together and they're suing the state of Ohio because of what's been going on for many, many years. Can you tell me what's going on there?
100 school districts have joined together to sue the state over the voucher program, the Ed Choice program. They say that it is unconstitutional. Every state, including Ohio, has in their constitution a clause that guarantees a viable, high-quality public school system. The wording varies from state to state, but nevertheless, states do have a constitutional a guarantee of a public school system for all families to have easily accessible. What the plaintiffs are contending in this lawsuit is that taking money out of the school system, the public system, to pay for these voucher programs is weakening the state's ability to enforce that constitutional right. And there's a lot of evidence that that's true. As I said earlier, you've got the problem of economies of scale, where the school, when they lose students, can't necessarily cut their costs. That harms the program for everybody. You've got the situation also that the money disappears oftentimes into schools that are very poor performing. There's been a research study about the voucher program in Ohio that was conducted by a conservative think tank. It was paid for by the Walton Foundation. So you would think that that research study would say that the voucher program improves achievement, but they didn't find that. They found that it actually harms both achievement in math and reading. So you've got a system with the vouchers that is harming the local schools. At the same time, it's decreasing the quality of education in Ohio for everybody.
Jeff, what is the attempt on behalf of the 100 school districts to eliminate charters altogether?
The lawsuit is aimed at the voucher program, which is, you know, different from charter schools.
Okay.
What they want to do, yes, is they want to shut down the state's voucher program.
Okay, so as a result, the charters won't get the funding, and they'd probably go away, wouldn't they?
Well, in the case of a voucher program, the money is going to private schools, That's not the same thing as a charter school, although it's confusing. I think a lot of parents are confused by that. And many of these private schools are kind of struggling to begin with because they're low quality schools. A lot of them have been shown to be low quality. The really high quality private schools charge so much tuition that the vouchers wouldn't even pay for a parent's tuition costs. So, yeah, a lot of the money in the voucher program is going to low quality, struggling private schools. And so many of them, yeah, they would probably go away without the voucher program.
Jeff, in your opinion, I know you're not a lawyer. You write about these things. But what's your gut telling you? You think that they've got a pretty good case, these 100 school districts in the state of Ohio?
I really don't know, because it's, to my knowledge, this sort of lawsuit is unprecedented. I don't know of any other place that's had a similar suit. I don't know also about the judicial makeup in Ohio, whether it's state courts are packed with conservatives like in other places or not. I do know, though, that there's a logic to their lawsuit, and it seems sensible to me to doubt the constitutionality of voucher programs because it does restrict and essentially harm what our public school system is able to do as the money bleeds out of the system.
Bottom line, you're taking public money, our tax dollars, and you're giving it to somebody in the private sector. And that just doesn't pass the smell test, does it?
No, it doesn't. It would be like turning all of our streets and highways into freeways and roadways where you have to pay to drive on them. It'd be like handing over the transportation system to private companies. You know, that just doesn't work for everyone. Toll roads are not things that are affordable to some people. And I think the analogy is appropriate because public schools are essentially infrastructure that all families should have and all communities need for the health of the entire community.
Jeff Bryant joining us on our live line with the Independent Media Institute. Talking about schools, we have a real interesting story out of Erie, Pennsylvania we'll be getting to next. Later in the show, Robert Chapp Thornton will be joining us from Austin, Texas on behalf of the United Association.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Jeff Bryant on behalf of the Independent Media Institute. Been covering schools all around America for about 13 years. Jeff, I saw this on your website about community schools. Community schools are helping a hard-hit city dig out of tough times. And the case in point is Erie, Pennsylvania. And I tell you, we've talked about this on the show. As you know, this is a show supported by labor unions. We try to support the middle class. We've seen a hollowing out of the middle class because so many good jobs have just disappeared. They've gone to Mexico. They've gone to China, to Vietnam. Communities have lost their tax base. And this is a prime example. Erie, Pennsylvania, GE Transportation. I guess at one time, according to your story, they had what, 20,000 workers? Is that right?
Yes. Yes, at one time, at its height, yeah.
And are they gone? Have they disappeared altogether?
The plant is still open, but it's a mere trace of what it used to be. I think there's less than 2,000 workers left now.
So 10% of what they once were, and that obviously is going to have an effect on the tax base. And they're not alone. I see other plants in Erie, Pennsylvania, Hammer Mill Paper Company, that's a big one, Lord Corporation, a maker of industrial coatings, adhesives, motion management devices, and sensing technologies. And then there's a plumbing equipment manufacturer called Zurn. They're also shedding jobs, and this had a huge impact. Well, talk to me about that impact on the schools, because Erie, Pennsylvania, I mean, this is middle America, and this is just an example. There's many Erie PAs out there, but what happened, and how was the community able to turn this around, Jeff?
Yes, the story about Erie, I think, is something important for communities everywhere to know about. Erie was a robust middle class, like you say, actively working community. And then manufacturers started to leave left and right. Mexico, China, Texas, they went various places. The community also started losing its students to charter schools. Pennsylvania has a very robust online charter school industry that can enroll students from anywhere in the state. So families started enrolling their kids in the online charters. Pennsylvania also has families have the ability to pull their kids out of district schools and send them to another district. And all of these things were just whittling away at the school population. With the tax base eroding, with the parents leaving the school system, the schools just got more and more bereft of the resources that they need. Pennsylvania also has a very unfair funding system for schools. The states provide very little of the funding, and I think it's something like 34-35% comes from the state. So you've got a place like Erie where the property taxes couldn't be raised any further because so many people now are unemployed. You can't tax them more. There's no money there. The business community has moved out, so there's not money coming in from them either. Many of the buildings are actually government buildings because it's the county seat. So you can't tax those. You can't tax the private schools and the churches, things like that. So schools were just getting bereft of the resources that they needed. It got so bad that the superintendent went to the state capitol and said, if you don't come up with some money to rescue our schools, I'm going to close all of our high schools.
Wow.
And when he made that threat, it made the lawmakers in the surrounding districts afraid because they didn't want to have to then enroll the kids that would come from Erie. They knew that it would have an impact on their schools. They would all of a sudden be flooded with Erie kids because you got to send this kid somewhere. And so they said, okay, we'll come up with the money. Before the superintendent left the district, he got so frustrated with the state that he left the district and moved to Vermont. But before he left, he did two things. He got those rescue funds. And the other thing he did was he started an idea called community schools, which is a model for school districts to follow that turns the schools, each individual school, into a community hub that attends to the needs of the families, all the needs, not just the academic needs, but also things like health care and nutrition and the social, emotional, and mental needs of children and families. And what that did to help the community is to rally around their schools. Parents said, well, you know, my kid, he can go to the school, not only be assured of a teacher, but also have access to a nurse. And if necessary, a food pantry. And what that did is that got the loyalties of the families to their public schools. And it also lifted up the community because they could see, well, the schools are really essential for us. And so, especially when COVID hit, the schools became even more of an important safety net. The schools were supplying kids with the computer access that they needed and the internet access they needed to still participate in schools. And what that did is it helped Erie improve not only the quality of the school district, but also its academic outcomes too. You know, it's kind of hard to tell with test scores whether those performances have improved because you've got this situation with COVID where the testing has been very irregular. But the individual schools have reported that their attendance is improving and the engagement with the students is improving and the climate, the school climates are better.
And a lot of this is the result of United Way of Erie County. And this is a nonprofit that teamed up with the schools and just pretty much turned things around. We don't know the extent of how much they've turned it around, but it's a lot better than it was. Jeff, is this the prescription for the future for public schools, especially the ones devastated by industry loss? And there's so many in America.
Erie is just one of the many stories I've covered about school districts using the community school approach. In Erie, yes, they teamed up with United Way, but in other communities, the nonprofit partners are different. But in each community, the idea of the community school approach is that you do team up with partners, mostly nonprofits, who can help out with the services, help out with some of the funding, and also analyze and bring community voice into the school. So you're actually helping people with what they need. Mm-hmm. For instance, one school district down in Florida that adopted the community school approach, they didn't necessarily focus on healthcare first. They found out that what parents were concerned about was that getting their kids to and from school was not safe. So they had very high absentee rates. So what the school did is look into it and more deeply and found out that one of the big problems was there weren't any sidewalks and streetlights around the school. So it was dangerous to walk to school, especially in the winter. So what they did is they went to the community and said, we need streetlights. And the community found a way to raise money from various sources, state and federal grants in particular, to add 150 streetlights to the area surrounding the school, and improve the sidewalks. And their attendance rates shot up dramatically. And what that did is it produced academic outcomes down the road because more kids were attending school, attending classes, and getting instruction. So, you know, each community has different needs. And the idea of the community school approach is that you first listen to what the needs are of the community, find the partners that will help you, and then you do something about those needs. In Erie, the needs were, particularly when the pandemic struck, were very basic things like winter coats and hats and gloves. Kids weren't coming to school because they didn't have warm clothing. I covered a community school approach that was in a district in rural Minnesota, and the district included a Native American reservation, and it was in a district that had a lot of freshwater lakes. So what this when the pandemic hit and people had less access to nutritious food, the school opened a bait and tackle shop. so the parents could come in and buy tackle and bait and fish in the freshwater lakes and feed their family with the fish. So it varies from place to place, but the model works because it does follow the idea that you find out what the community needs are, you attend to those needs, and it lifts up all children and families.
Jeff, great story. Simple things like heat in a classroom or lights around the school can make a huge difference in the learning abilities of a student. Great stuff there. Jeff Bryan joining us from the Independent Media Institute. Website is independentmediainstitute.org. For more information, definitely check out that story out of Erie, Pennsylvania, how community schools are helping a hard-hit city dig out of tough times. You take care, stay safe, and let's talk down the road, okay?
That sounds good. Take care. Bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go down to Austin, Texas, and check out with the United Association. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment, and there's a lot of that going on right now. A lot of people getting away from low-paying jobs to better-paying jobs with better benefits. And you can find more at ulagency.org, ulagency.org. Let's go to Austin, Texas right now. And joining us on our live line is Robert Chap Thornton. Middle name is actually Chapman, but they call him Chap Thornton. And he is the business manager of the United Association Local 286. Mr. Thornton, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me today.
So most people call you Chap or Robert or Bob or what?
They call me Chap, and they have since I was a child, only in school, on the first day of school, till I told them what my nickname was, what I went by. Did anybody ever call me Robert? So okay, if anybody calls me Robert, I, a lot of times I don't even know to acknowledge, unless they're coming after me and I'm in trouble.
There you go. So, well, my real name is Ed or Edward, but I've been Flash since 1973. It was a radio nickname I was given, and it's going to go with me to my grave. Everybody knows me as Flash. There's one Flash that's born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, and here we are. We have Flash on one side and Chap on the other. So thanks for joining us here on the show. So you're a business manager. Talk to me about Local 286. I saw your website. Is it still, 1,300 plumbers and pipe fitters? Is that right?
We need to update our website, Flash. We've had some tremendous growth in the last 3 years, and we are a little over 1,700 total members, counting our retirees and life members and everyone. Right at 1,300 to 1,400 actively working journeymen and apprentices. Our apprenticeship has exploded in the last 3 to 4 years. historically, back in the 90s when I came in an apprenticeship class, a first-year class, they were taking in 12 to 18, and then it grew to 25 and 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 and 80. And these last few years, we have taken in right around 100 a year, first years. And this last September of 21, we took in 150 first-year apprentices for a grand total of about 460 apprentices in our Local 286 apprenticeship program. So very, very proud of the growth of our training program, our local, and just the Austin area has exploded lately.
You should be proud of that, sir. That's quite an accomplishment. Now, what do you attribute that to? Some of the outreach you're doing, or population explosion over there in Austin? Combination of the two? What's the story?
All the above. Folks, I was born and raised in Austin, and you know, there's been lots of folks moving here. Of course, lots of new businesses coming to Austin, lots of corporate relocations. We've got, you know, the last couple of years, we've gotten Tesla here, along with some other, well, the corporate headquarters, the Facebooks, I'm drawing a blank on some of the other big names that have kind of come to this area. Of course, Tesla's been the big buzzword here for the last year, 18 months of them coming. And then Samsung has been a long-term partner in Austin. They've been here since 1996, but they've just recently announced a huge semiconductor manufacturing plant on the north side of Austin. Actually, it'll be in Taylor, Texas, which is still in the jurisdiction of Local 286, but it's getting towards our northern jurisdiction. It'll be up in Williamson County and what is now a rural area, but I suspect when they build, it just like we've seen with Tesla in recent months, you'll see lots of support businesses coming along with it and lots of growth in all the support industries that go with them. So real excited about the future to Austin. I don't know why folks come to Austin. I mean, it's a great city. I love it, but I don't know any better. Born and raised here.
You know, it's interesting, too, because Texas is a pretty conservative state. But Austin, Texas, which is the capital, is kind of like the blue spot in a sea of red. Is that the best way to describe Austin, Texas?
It is absolutely an island of blue in a sea of red. Texas is a very conservative state, very proud state, and you do have you've got some Democratic government in your larger cities of Houston and Austin, somewhat in Dallas, and maybe a little in San Antonio. But you know, the vast rural areas, very conservative state, very conservative minded folks. Even within our membership, even within union membership, you know, we have lots of healthy discussion about politics, especially in the last couple of years and everything that's happened in our crazy world.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh yeah. Well, there's certainly a lot to talk about. We should mention the website too. It's local286.org. Local286.org. Yes, I see you were chartered back in 1923, so 99 years. Next year is going to be 100 years for 286.
Yes, sir. In November of 2023, we will celebrate 100 years chartered under the United Association. So looking forward, hopefully we get past all our pandemic and sickness and COVID-19 mess, and we can have a large celebration to celebrate that 100 years coming up.
Well, that pandemic, as you know, Chap, has changed everything in America, and we're seeing a lot of people quitting their jobs. I'm sure you're getting some apprenticeships, because many of those quitting their jobs are low-paying jobs, and they want a, you know, a pathway to the middle class, and you're going to find that with the trades, especially with the UA. So that's certainly good. And I would imagine you're ready for that kind of thing. You know, you got that going on. Plus, you got this infrastructure bill. You're going to be seeing a whole lot of money coming into the state of Texas. What's your take on that? Are you ready for it?
I don't know. I mean, we will be ready. It's with all the other work coming along. Even you take infrastructure out of the picture, and just the sheer volume of building that we have coming in 2022 and going forward. We train to demand and we organize to demand. So as we work with our contractor partners, have a good relationship with our signatory contractors, and you know we react to what their needs are in the marketplace, and we've done a good job of it the last several years with this tremendous growth, and I know that we will continue to do so, and we have to do so in order to survive.
Exactly,
you know, we have to our general president comments that our number one job is to provide skilled labor to our signatory contractor partners. I mean, all the other wonderful things that we do and you know, manage a health and welfare program or insurance program for our membership and provide training and have a pension, that if we don't provide skilled labor to our signatory contractors, all that, that's job one. That is absolutely job one.
And I'll tell you, there's a lot of branches when it comes to the UA and what members do. We're talking process piping, steam, hot water, refrigeration, air conditioning, medical gas, boilers, pipe fabrication, hydraulics, controls, all welding processes, HVA service, energy management, rigging, drafting, CAD drawing, industrial instrumentation. I mean, there's a lot that's covered in those apprenticeship programs. And again, we're talking highly skilled labor. That's what this is all about. Chap, I got to talk to you about what happened in Texas. It's going to be a year in February. You had that crazy cold snap, pipes breaking. I'm sure a lot of your members were busy fixing the pipes. You had power outages. I know Texas is not on the energy grid. Now, I bring this up because I came across a story not long ago. And the story, in essence, said that what happened last year may happen again because some folks in power didn't do what they should have done. What are you hearing on your end over there? It's kind of scary with that scenario happening again, but I'd like to get your take on it.
I am absolutely no energy expert, but from what I understand, yes, Texas stands independent in its energy. We are not connected to the nationwide grid. And the incentive in the past for our energy providers, their incentive to winterize was that during peak demand periods, they essentially make more money when they're able to generate electricity. So it's very capitalistic view that, okay, I must spend money to winterize. That way I will be ready and provide electricity when the other folks are unable to. Well, it didn't work out that way. We didn't have enough electricity. And from what I understand, we were in a very dangerous spot there at one point where there could have been damage to the statewide grid that would have taken a long, long period to get everything back up. Personally, all of us, it's like we lost a week of our lives because we went into survival mode. We were home for several days in a row. We're not necessarily used to that or even prepared for that because we just don't get weather activity for that long a period of time, especially for the whole week. And it was a mess. Everything I've read trying to keep up with what they've done and what they've said they've done, I don't know. But what I do know is more people have moved here more houses have been built, more commercial buildings have been built. There's more demand out there than there was a year ago for power, and time will tell if the grid will hold up. Heaven forbid we have another incident like we did. But yes, yeah, the members were very busy. Lots of even on the commercial job sites and commercial facilities we take care of, you know, lots of damage to their piping system. So lots of members ours, you know, tied up fixing that. And not only that, one of the employers made the comment, you know, he was having trouble getting everybody to come to work because our members were out there helping out their friends and their family and their neighbors, trying to get all their stuff back up because there was just such a shortage of folks able to do those repairs. And it was all across the state. It wasn't just a certain area. There was, you know, parts of Texas that hardly ever freeze were below freezing for several days in a row. It's very, very unusual event that happened.
Yeah, well, hats off to your local. We're speaking with Robert Chap Thornton, who is business manager of United Association Local 286 based in Austin, Texas. I know there are a lot of UA locals that donated their time and efforts and materials, too. They were scrounging for materials to make sure people got their pipes back in order. That was a mess. And it went on essentially for weeks before they got that together. So I hope it doesn't happen again. You don't know. I mean, we've seen some crazy weather all over the world, not just in Texas. But let's see what the future holds. But it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's good to hear that you got a lot of business happening down there. The population is growing, and your apprenticeship program is growing as well, up to, you'd mentioned, like 1,700 members. That's definitely good. Do you have a projection for maybe 5 years out? I mean, there's a lot of good things happening. Like I said, that infrastructure money, they want to fix a lot of the lead pipes. I don't know how many lead pipes you have down there, but what do you think maybe 5-10 years down the road?
5 years down the road, if everything holds together like what folks think it will, I mean, we're growing on average, 100 to 200 members a year. So 5 years down the road, you know, we could be looking at an additional 500 members, 800 members, something along those lines. Time will tell. Time will tell.
I hear you.
My biggest concern is keeping everybody working, you know, and trying to keep this model of labor that we have, you know, keep them all employed and keep them employed at home. And that's a tough part of our industry because we know how construction can cycle, but we're in a good cycle, good part of that cycle right now. We've been in it a good while, and the forecast is still good.
Yeah. Yeah, we just got to get out of this pandemic, keep workers safe, and we'll be all good, right?
Absolutely, yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to leave it on that note. Robert Chap Thornton, they call him Chap, and that's been his name for many, many years. He's a businessman. How many years for a business manager, Chap?
Business manager coming up on, it'll be 4 years in March. I've been business manager, and then I was business agent for 5 years prior to that. So I've been a full-time employee of Local 286 since July of 2013, coming up on 9 years this July.
Well, congratulations to you, and congratulations to the whole Local 286. If you want to find more, just go to the website, local286.org. You can also check them out on Facebook. You take care, my friend, and please keep in touch with us down the road, okay?
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Flash.
That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, we have Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers and the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.